in the interest of time, I'm Jeff Backer. I chair the Staff Affairs Committee, and at the moment, we're without our president or vice. So I'd like to open the meeting because we do have some, here's our vice. So we do have some a guest or two and that's going to call in, and so we want to keep on track. So,
we can hardly hear you, Jeff.
Okay. So Nicole, if you'd call the order, the roll.
Chris Beck. Fay Gallant. Brad Crick. Leslie Walls.
Here, but we can just barely.
Yeah, we can't hear you at all.
Okay, give me a second. Is that any better?
No.
No.
Any better?
No. Nope.
So are you able to hear me?
Yes. I can hear you now, yes.
So swallow that microphone.
I heard that.
All right. Leslie Walls?
Here.
Jamie Warwick?
Here.
Jessica DeRochers? Jesse Atencio? Lawrence Murakami?
Here.
Janine Smith? Jan Christensen? Jane Grossclose?
Here.
Kim Eames? Jeff Baxter?
Here.
Trish Winters?
Here.
Jessica McCallum?
Here.
Susan Sanborn?
She is here.
Jeanette Altman? Nate Bauer? Richard Machida, Proxy Davis? And you have full voting rights in Richard's place. Yorko?
Yes, here.
Evelyn?
Here.
Selena? Tom? Anyone whose name I did not call? Quorum was met.
So next up is approval of the agenda.
Sorry, approval of the agenda for staff council meeting number 256. Does anyone have any changes?
Do I need a motion to approve?
Can I have a motion to approve? I motion to approve. Any seconds?
A second.
Okay. Any discussion? Okay. Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. So we have an agenda. Do we have Erica on the phone? Or is she coming in for today?
Yes, I just called in.
Okay, great. So, Erica, you have the floor if you're ready.
Oh, okay. Let me just, I'm sorry, I did just have a phone call, so I'm a little late to get in here. I wanted to just kind of touch base with the staff and talk about some of the things that we've been working on. I know that we have some questions on the wellness program, and I definitely will spend most of my time on that. But I also just wanted to touch base on a few things with the plan changes that might be coming forward this year. the JHCC is actually meeting right after this meeting at 9:30, which is why we kind of moved me up a bit on the agenda. And some of the things that we will be talking about as far as plan changes are things that we can't go into too much detail, and it'd be a little premature to talk about them until they're decided on. But one of the things that I did want to let everybody know is that the consumer-driven health plan, that's the health plan that has the health savings account, that will be changing this year because the minimum deductible and the maximum out-of-pocket are tied to inflation indicators by the IRS. The Treasury Department issues new plan limits every year. And for 2015, that means that the minimum deductible will be going up to $1,300 for an individual and $2,600 for a family. What the JHCC needs to decide is, do we want to make the small incremental changes tied to the inflation and, you know, changes as the Treasury Department comes out with new limits? Or do we want to make a more significant change and let the plan kind of sit for a while, which would do two things. We wouldn't be changing it every year, and it would differentiate it more from the high deductible health plan, which some people are a little, you know, they're so similar, some people are a little confused by the differences. So that's something that the committee will be talking about today, as well as some other things. Primera has put into place or has proposed a lot of really good initiatives for improving services and reducing costs. The committee doesn't need to act on all of these, but some of them they do because they do have a plan change tied to them or a price tied to them. So it's interesting to see what we can put in place in the terms of like telemedicine and more enhanced high-risk pregnancy. The last 2 years, our high claims list has had very expensive premature babies. You know, not a lot of them, but it just takes one to really make an impact on the plan. So one of the things Primera has been proposing is a new case management program for high-risk pregnancies and then for what's called NICU or Newborn Intensive Care Unit case management. So those are some things that would be interesting to have on our plan, but they, again, they do have a cost, but they could stand to save us a lot of money through some case management and just kind of oversight on the care that these very sick babies get. Anybody have any questions? No? Okay. Well, then, moving on, the next thing that I want to talk about is the wellness program. And we're looking at doing, well, we are increasing, as we said when we first put this concept of the wellness program moving towards an outcomes-based program over a multi-year, you know, multi-phase program, that the first year would be pretty easy. The bar would be pretty low. All you had to do was the personal health assessment online at Healthy Roads and then get the biometric screening done. This year, we're also requiring those two items, and I've had some feedback saying, well, my doctor says you don't have to get blood work done except every maybe 3 to 5 years. And yes, that's true. You don't need to get it done every year. But for the purposes of our program, we're interested in tracking improvements over time. And so that's why we are requiring that people get the biometric screening done again this year. Again, starting in January and starting in the rural campuses, we will be doing some on-site events and also having the patient service centers in Fairbanks and Anchorage. And the physician form has been updated for this year with the April 30th deadline date. That's out on our website right now. So if you've got your appointment with your doctor, you want to go get your wellness exam and a routine blood work, just take that form into them and have them complete that. We also are having people do a few more things to qualify for the rebate next year, and those are earning points or credits towards your program. And the JHCC wanted to do two things. First of all, they really would like as much as possible to not have self-reported data. And that's something that we tried to do as much as possible. And what we're doing for the dental exam, vision exam, and the wellness exam, and the flu shot or adult immunization is we're arranging a file feed from Primera and VSP, Two Healthy Roads. And I believe the first file feed from VSP has already happened. Blue Cross is wanting a bit more contracting language changes done before they'll do the transfer, but they're all set to go. The claims are looking back to July 1, so if you had a vision exam in July or August, it should be transferred over and you get credit for it on the Healthy Roads portal. There are some things that, because people get flu shots at work, they get flu shots through their community health center, they may or may not file a claim for it. We have what's called an attestation question for the flu shot, so you can say, yes, I got a flu shot on such and such date here, and you can also attest that you're a non-smoker. We're not doing the what's called cotinine testing, because that is very expensive, and when you assume we have approximately 12% of our adult population as smokers, it's not cost efficient to do the actual testing for the cotinine testing. So there are some questions here that I did get from people ahead of time, and one of the things was, how does the information get to Healthy Roads? And that, again, is the file feed that we're doing. Keep in mind that you should make your appointment for your visits sooner rather than later, because it does take some time to get your physician has to submit the claim to Primera. Primera has to process the claim, and then it has to get onto the file feed to Healthy Roads. So if you're going to try to do your dental exam on April 30th, it's probably not going to make it on time. That being said, we do have a delay. That's one of the reasons we have between April 30th and then the rebate starts in July. We need that time to make sure we get all the file feeds done and the reporting done and let the campuses do the data entry to get the rebate set up for that first paycheck to hit in July. Do you have any questions at this point?
Hi, Erica. On one of the questions, it was about how steps or exercise is input into Healthy Roads. Is that a self-reporting piece?
Right. That is a self-reported piece. And starting after January 1, the portal is going to look different. They're doing a lot of enhancements to their website, and that'll roll out January 1. Right now, you can do manual step reporting through the Fitbit site. You can report through the Fitbit site to Healthy Roads. But after January 1, it'll be more where you can do it yourself directly. And the fitness thing, somebody said in one of the questions that it looks like there's not enough months to earn all the points. Well, actually, the physical activity is you have to do all that in one month period. So it's not a matter of not enough months, because you only get 1 month to do the fitness activity. You pick whatever month you want, but you can do a couple of them, but to get the point, you have to do the required amount of activity in a month's period. We're also going to be doing another challenge in the spring, and that'll be a fitness challenge probably in March. And so you can get your points from your physical activity, and you can get your credit for a challenge at the same time. There were two things that the committee wanted to do. The JHCC wanted to reward people for doing things they should be doing anyway, like your dental exam, your vision exam, getting your annual wellness exam, being a non-smoker. Now, you can accrue all your five credits for just doing things you pretty much should be doing anyway. But also, if you are someone who just does not want to go to the dentist or whatever, you can also earn credits or points by doing the coaching, taking the e-classes on the website, and doing the challenges. You know, so we kind of did a mix of how people can earn their credits.
So, Erica, that sounds like maybe that was an answer to one of the questions. But so one of them was that their annual doctor's visit doesn't happen until June, and they worry that if they schedule it any earlier, it would be two visits in the same year and insurance wouldn't cover it. So would the solution to that be use some of the other options for points, or is there a way to schedule it earlier and still have it covered?
Well, if you did it in June last year, that's in the prior plan year. You could do it in July again if you want, because it renews every plan year.
Okay, so it's by fiscal year, not by 12-month period.
Correct. And it's the plan doesn't say you get one every 12 months. I mean, really, the preventive benefit is unlimited, and you get whatever is appropriate for your age and gender. Obviously, getting four preventive exams in a year is not age or gender appropriate for anybody, but you can do it every plan year, and there shouldn't be a limitation on it. It's not like it renews every 12 months. That's the same with the dental exam, too. You get two dental cleanings a year, and you can do them 2 weeks apart if you want. But the idea is that you would spread it up, you know, every 4 to 6 months, something like that. But no, it isn't limited on that in that regard.
Is that the same with VSP? Is it by plan years or?
Mm-hmm. That's correct. It's by plan year. And I'm sorry. I need to. I was trying to read the printout of these questions, and I do have to grab my glasses here. I did have a question on here about submitting, logging into Healthy Roads, and somebody was having trouble. It was a FIP, and if they're having problems logging into Healthy Roads, remember that spouses and partners, even if they're an employee who's waived coverage, need to log in directly to healthyroads.com. If you're an employee and you have waived coverage on the health plan, but you are covered as the spouse of another employee, we aren't reporting you to Healthy Roads as an employee. We're reporting you to Healthy Roads as a spouse. So you need to go directly to healthyroads.com because they don't have your employee ID number, and they don't have your you won't be able to do the single sign-on as an employee because that information has not been transmitted to – it's not in the system. So that's one question that we do get a lot. Employees really should use the single sign-on, but they don't have to. I have another employee who says it's easier to log into Healthy Roads from his phone directly without going through the single sign-on. And that works for him, and so that's fine. The single sign-on is designed to make it easier for employees and also to have sort of a different process for employees and spouses to more easily track them. But the single sign-on, if you're having problems with that, that is done here at Statewide down at OIT. That is, if you're having problems with the single sign-on, don't call Healthy Roads because they won't be able to help you. That's a Statewide OIT thing. If your spouse or your partner is having problems logging on, they should call Healthy Roads customer service because we can't help you with their log-on, but we can help with the single sign-on, because that's done here. Let's see, the other question I see here is having problems submitting the biometrics. It looks like they were trying to submit the healthcare provider form multiple times and it's not getting processed. You do need to give them a little bit of time. It's not immediate when they get it. They usually try to get it within, you know, 5 to 7 days. They'll get it posted to your dashboard. But if there really is a problem getting that submitted, please contact Timothy Armbruster or me here at Statewide, and we can contact our people at Healthy Roads and find out what's going on. But it shouldn't. I mean, the fax number that's on the form is Healthy Roads Secure Fax for, you know, it's a HIPAA-compliant secure fax arrangement. So that should work. If anyone's having problems with it, let us know right away. Okay, I think we've covered pretty much all the things that were on here. Oh, how will we be notified if we've met the requirement? You know, you can track your progress towards your incentive by going out to Healthy Roads and just checking your incentive program, and it tells you right on there what you've done and what you've gotten credit for. So you can even go and check the history to see what happened this last year. So if you are ever really wondering, well, did I do everything I needed to do? Do I have my 5 credits? You can go out on the website and check.
Excuse me, Eric, I have a question about that.
Uh-huh.
So you say you can check it in your history. However, When I went in to check mine this year because I was contacted saying that I wouldn't be getting my rebate, it didn't show my self-assessment that I had done in April when the first time you guys sent out the information on the rebates. And I knew I had done it because I used mine as an example because I am the PPA also here at the campus in Bristol Bay. And so I knew I had done it, and we had the people come out and do our biometrics, and I was contacted by someone who said I wasn't qualified for it. So when I went in to check, it didn't show my first assessment. It only showed my second assessment.
Huh. Now, when did you check? Because after the plan year, when the new plan year starts, you have to go and select the prior plan year.
Okay. I'll do that now. But the young man who contacted me, I asked him about that and asked him what my options were, and he never responded. So I've just emailed him again.
Okay, yeah, because if you go out to Healthy Roads and you go to the incentive program, you can check my program history. And there's a pull-down menu since now we have 2 years. Last year there was only the one option because we only had the 1 year, but now there's two incentive years. So you have to go and pick last year, and it'll say what you did. It'll say you did 1 out of 2 or 2 out of 2 or 0 out of 2 or whatever.
Okay.
Okay.
Eric, I think we had one other question that was submitted in advance that wasn't specific to Healthy Roads about the Affordable Care Act implications for student employees.
Uh-huh.
Could you talk about that one for a couple minutes? It was question 9 on that sheet.
Right. Now, the student employees is something that we've been talking about a lot with all the HR offices and with systems on how to track them. Every student except work-study students have to have their hours tracked. And we'll track their hours over we are using what's called a 6-month measuring period. And the first time out, we're going to use a 3-month, as a transition, we're using a 3-month look back period starting, I believe, the pay period that starts January 25th. And we'll track the hours of everybody in that time period. And this goes for adjuncts and temporaries and graduate students and regular students. Any employee, we're going to be tracking their hours. And if they're currently not in a benefit eligible position, and they are deemed over that 3-month period to have worked 30 or more hours on average a week, then we will offer them health coverage starting July 1. Now, it doesn't mean that they have to be covered. It just means that we will offer them coverage, sort of like an open enrollment type offer. I'm looking at this. Certain offices at UF have decided to no longer offer students more than 29 hours per week. Well, if a student works 20 hours a week during the academic year and then works 40 hours a week during the between semesters and the summer, I think their average over time is still going to be under 30 hours per week. I believe Sherry at UAF HR actually did the calculation and determined that unless they work excessive hours, that they probably would not exceed the 30 hours per week. So we certainly are not limiting students to 29 hours per week in the summer, but individual departments are free to do that if they choose. So it's something that we can't control what happens at the department level, but we are tracking the hours, and if people do exceed those 30 or more hours per week, they will be offered health coverage.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. The whole thing of this Affordable Care Act and how to implement the hour tracking has been sort of a lot of discussion and hand-wringing, especially when it comes to graduate students who are pretty much paid on a stipend, and adjuncts, especially the non-credit adjuncts or anyone who gets a non-credit assignment for a set amount of dollars paid either on a pay period basis or as a lump sum at the conclusion of a job or project. How to track the hours for these people has been a source of considerable discussion and hand-wringing among the departments. And we do have something set up in Banner to track this, and we've sent out information to the PPAs and cost center clerks to ask them to come up with pretty much a best estimate of the hours that this person is expected to work in a pay period. That information has been added on the job form, and it's now in the job record in Banner. So that's the mechanism by which we're going to be tracking these hours. The first year is a transition year. The guidance that we've gotten from the Treasury Department has said, okay, we understand employers are having a bit of a difficulty with this. That 95% target might be kind of high for the first year transition year. Our goal is to identify and offer coverage to at least 70% of our full-time employees. So the first year we have a little wiggle room to kind of get it right. So this is going to be a transition year for us, well, for everybody, and it's going to be interesting to see how this works out. With that being said, there's a lot of discussion out in the, probably you guys don't spend a lot of time in the benefits blogosphere or anything, checking benefits websites and discussion on this, but the Affordable Care Act is, of course, a very contentious issue in Congress, and now that the Republicans have control of the Senate as well as the House, it's going to be interesting to see what sort of changes come forward with this law. One of the things that is being targeted as probably the most likely to change is the definition of full-time employee from 30 hours to 40 hours. But, you know, that's just what's being discussed as being the most likely thing that could change here with the new legislative picture. We do still have the same administration in the White House that passed this law, and there's not a big appetite to do a lot of change, but there is interest in some cooperation and discussion on what we can do to make it work a little better. And, you know, Democrats in both houses are also interested in offering some tweaks and changes to improve the law. And the one that I've heard most is that definition of full-time employee going up to 40 hours. That being said, nothing's been done yet, and everybody who's got a January 1 plan has to have already offered coverage to these people, and their coverage starts January 1. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. We're definitely keeping an eye on it.
So, Erica, this is Trish Winters. Is the transition year a calendar year or a fiscal year? When does it start for us, or has it already?
For us, it's a plan year. It's for plan year starting on or after January 1, 2014, or 15. So for us, that's July 1. So we actually get a few months to kind of see how it's working for some other people. And we are definitely, you know, kind of keeping an eye out and trying to find out how other people are doing it and how it's working for other institutions. We do have to start reporting on this, though. Even though we're on a plan year, the required reporting on it is early 2016. Just like the W-2 process, we will just be reporting for 6 months, though.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we just have a couple more minutes with Erica before she has to sign off. Are there any other questions?
Erica, there was a pamphlet included in our documentation for this meeting that goes over the Healthy Roads Incentive Program. Is that being distributed at all?
Yeah, that's in process right now. It's being mailed. Healthy Roads is doing the mailing for us. And I was hoping that it would be in homes before Thanksgiving, but just seems like, you know, best laid plans of just about everything. It seems like there was a delay with something, and it's still in process, but it is being mailed. It'll be mailed to employees' HR addresses, which is another thing, just as a kind of a public service announcement here. Make sure that you go out and check in UA Online, check your HR address, because that's the one we use for all HR-related things like benefits and payroll and all that thing. You can update your mailing address on UA Online, but that does not update your HR address. You have to use a change form and update that with Human Resources. So just in advance of all the mailings going out next year, open enrollment especially is just a few months away, please make sure your HR address is correct.
Erica, could you send out the dates that you offered flu shots here on campus back in October and November?
Oh, goodness.
If it's something that you can look up and then send out so that we can fill out our forms saying that, yes, this was the date I got my flu shot.
Okay, yeah, I'll have to get with, I know there was October 21st, October 28th at Wood Center.
Was the 21st the one at MBS?
Yes.
Okay.
October 29th was in the International Arctic Research Center lobby. And then October 30th was in Butrovich Building. And then we actually did do some more as well. And I don't have those dates right in front of me right here.
At least one of those dates was the date of our last staff council meeting. So if somebody is looking back at November 18th, so in the Wood Center.
Wednesday, November 6th, we also did them at Wood Center. That was our other date. No, wait, I'm sorry. This was last year. We did do another one at Wood Center, though, and I'd have to get that date. The flu shots were actually set up. We had Student Health Center set those up, and I think they did an excellent job with that. It was really I really appreciated them taking the role and setting them up because it was very easy for me to just say, yeah, I'll just send me the bill. So, yeah, Student Health Center could also probably tell you the dates, but I'll go back and look in my records and see what else we had, because I know we set up a couple of additional dates afterwards.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we have time for maybe one last question. Is there anyone else on the phone who wants to ask a question? Okay, anyone else in the room?
Erica, for the physical activity that might be or will be part of earning or potentially part of earning credit for Healthy Roads, is there any thought about looking at some of the recreation classes that are, for example, offered by CTC on Fairbanks campus? I don't know about other campuses for UAF. I assume UAA and UAS probably have some similar rec classes, but looking at either having those criteria fit so that if you're taking that class or one of those classes, you can say, oh, yeah, I did those in a month, or even if you're taking one of those classes, that could qualify.
Well, if you did that to get your physical activity, your workout time, yeah, that could work. I mean, how you do it is really up to you.
Right. Well, you were saying you had to do it within a month, and, these are 3 month, 3 month courses and 3 days.
Oh, right. Well, saying I took a fitness class isn't going to do it. You have to log your steps, log your minutes. Like I said, you can do that as part of a class, having a class to give you some structure to do it, but we don't have it set up yet where we are able to do that.
Would there be interest in that as a medium or a long-term goal? That's sort of pointing people back toward resources that, we already offer through tuition waiver, or even through, if you're doing something even locally with a private company that's working on fitness, that you can use that as a
one of the things that they do have, and they'll have it more available after January 1 is what's called the check-in app. And there are some places here in Alaska, some fitness centers that use that, where you check in and it credits your visit to Healthy Roads. And that's something that they offered to us, and I didn't want to really feature it too much because there really aren't that many places yet. They're working with the Alaska Club to get that set up and with the Student Rec Center. And we've also been in discussion with from the Student Health Center, from the Wellness Department, Katie Miller. We've been talking with Healthy Roads on things that we can do to kind of promote events and kind of combine forces, so to speak. So, yeah, we are in discussion with those things. Another big development in the wellness program, one of the things that we wanted with this Healthy Roads program is they offered an on-site program manager to help really round out the program with these sorts of events and also with the wellness champions across campus. And we had a real difficulty in recruiting and hiring for this position, but I'm happy to say that we do have somebody who is in training right now. She's going to start January 12th. She'll be located here in the Butrovich building, and she will be really taking over a lot of the management of the program and putting into place some of the other things that a good wellness program has, such as that outreach to the other sites and getting people on, like having wellness champions in every building who helps really take the message out to their coworkers. Because right now it's really, you know, we're really doing what we can as far as promoting this and distributing the information and trying to get the word out and getting people kind of excited and motivated about it. But we really need that program manager to get the wellness champions on board and leverage the other things that we have in our community, like and the student activity or the activity classes and things like that. And when this program manager really gets up and running, I think you'll really see a lot of those things come to life and take off.
Great. Thank you so much, Erica. We're going to let you go now so you can get to your next meeting. But
all right.
I really appreciate you calling in and talking to us today.
Yeah. Well, thank you a lot for having me. Okay. Bye.
Bye. Okay. Status of pending actions will be very quick. Leave share resolution. Staff Alliance, actually, Chris is sick, and I had an unexpected issue yesterday as well. They did not have quorum, so they did not take any action at Staff Alliance. So we will be following up on that and trying to get something back on that soon. And then on emergency leave policy, I guess we can keep that on pending actions until there's a firm policy, but for now it's still just the you can use 2 days of sick leave if the chancellor declares an emergency, same as we heard last month. So, do we have any public comment? No. Okay, do we have anyone here from ASUAF? Okay, if we hear from them later, we will just do it at that time. And Debu from Faculty Senate will be calling in a little later, but he doesn't have anything to report. Anything for staff achievements and highlights?
We have one that I should have mailed in, and I'll still try to get a write-up for it. But Ben Stacy, that we had talked about before, that was involved in the national committee, he was recently appointed by Governor Parnell just before one of the last things that he did. He got appointed to the Water Commission for the state of Alaska. So he's a governor appointee, and it's pretty exciting because he'll be able to really help set some policy in Alaska for water operators and also be able to represent UAS interests or UAH interests. So that's a very exciting thing and very prestigious. So we'll write up a better blurb, but I wanted to share that.
Excellent. That is very, very nice to hear. Any others? All right. That's a great one. So can move on to officer reports, which will also be very quick. This was great. I was worried about not having enough time in our schedule today, but I think we're cranking right along. Chris is out sick. Don't have anything really big to report. As I said, we were both out for Staff Alliance. But for Planning and Budget Committee, they're continuing to kind of move forward with just looking at kind of what our vision is for the university if we have to cut for continued years, trying to have a sense of where do we want to be as opposed to just cut after cut after cut haphazardly and ending up somewhere by accident, basically. So they're working through that now. And then all the various program reviews are continuing and are in progress. As well as the Revenue Committee, and all have a target date of early January to have a draft report to the Chancellor. I think that was everything I had for my report. It was pretty quick. So why don't we take our break now? And we could probably actually take 10 minutes today. And then there's coffee, tea, and water over here for those of you in the room. And we will reconvene at 9:35. Okay, so we're back. I hope you guys are back on the phone too. We'll go ahead, unless we have anyone from ASUAF on the phone to give comments. Okay. And the Chancellor won't be available until after 10, so we'll just know when he calls in and get his remarks whenever we can catch him this morning. He's in between meetings. So we're going to move on to unfinished business. Item A is the Fall 2014 Odd-Numbered Unit and At-Large Representative Election. Do we have those results attached? Or? Oh, we don't. Okay. But are we okay to approve them? Okay. So we have, the results are in. The elections are closed. We're just waiting for the final supervisor approvals before we post the names. But as we've done in past years, we can go ahead and approve the results. Okay, so we are approving the process. So do I have a motion to approve? Or a motion? Yeah, a motion to approve, and then we discuss. Sorry.
Yeah, I move to approve the results.
Thank you. Any seconds? Okay. Any discussion? Okay. Hearing none. Roll call or just verbal? Okay. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, we approve the 2014 Fall Staff Council election results. Item B, Smoke-Free Campus. This was just compiled from feedback last time, so I think at this point this is just a point of information, which was our response to and suggested revisions to the draft regulation on the smoke-free, tobacco-free campuses. That's attachment 12. And actually after Chris and I met with the Chancellor, he asked us to make potentially a couple more changes highlighting the sort of our thoughts on the – one of the things we mentioned was that it's a lot easier to enforce or to say something if you can point someone to an area where they can smoke as opposed to confronting someone you don't know and telling them that they can't smoke, period. And – and he thought that was fairly reasonable, and we also talked about the increased health risk of smoking in a car as opposed to outside in the air for the people who do smoke. So we are going to make a couple tweaks to this language and provide it back to him shortly. But I believe he's taken this, as is the President's Cabinet today. We did include the exemption for theater and film that use things that would have been excluded under the tobacco-like substances as stage cigarettes, basically, and then just reiterated our reasons for supporting designated areas, very limited designated areas. I think he also asked us to suggest where those places might be. And so we had Chris and I had a couple ideas, but if anyone else has a strong attachment or an idea for where we should suggest those areas, he thought it would be an easier sell if we say we want them and here are the places we want and this is why, as opposed to just kind of a vague do something.
Yeah. I have two. The first came out of Fresh Air Campus, the Fresh Air Campus Challenge Committee, and there was some discussion of, well, what if we had smoking huts? And what if there was one on upper campus, one on lower campus? We didn't say exactly where. But that, and that has, you know, a financial cost and also potentially a health cost, since we're talking about, you know, smoking in a car, unless it's vented, and then, well, then you've got the same issues of people walking around it. But that was one suggestion that group discussed. But another that I thought seemed like it would be a workable idea was designated smoking areas in the corners of larger parking lots. You'd sort of say, and I don't know if there'd be a parking implication to this, but you know, designate a corner of the bigger lot to say this is a smoking area.
Yeah, we did discuss that. The two that I suggested were the lot that's across from the Patty Center that has a lot of kind of open space in the back that doesn't generally fill up, where it's sort of out of the main foot traffic area. And then up on Westridge, one of the lots behind the building, one of the back lots there, where again it's not a high foot traffic area if it's on the back side of it. So, you know, the issue being that we want to avoid having people walk through a cloud of smoke, and we don't want it to be highly visible. So those would be kind of two parking lots that might easily have space to accommodate an area like that. But, yeah, definitely if you have suggestions, they are welcome. But I would, if you could email them to me and Chris this week, that would be good.
Just as a side note, yesterday SunStar came out with the article on the front page about UAFC's, well, it says the students weigh in on smoking ban, and then their student government report, they also noted in there that their remarks about the smoking ban.
What was their position, if you don't mind?
Oh, well, let me see if I can just read it.
Yeah.
It's real short. It says, resolution against a statewide tobacco-free policy. And it says here, a resolution against UA President Gamble's chancellors, Brian Rogers, John Pugh, and Tom Case's proposal to go tobacco-free as a statewide policy has been passed. The resolution highlights inequalities of the initial proposal, such as no offer of other locations in which one may smoke tobacco and or the general discrimination toward smokers for a personal choice that not involving the university. And that's all it says. So they just... They didn't say anything about any actions or anything else. That's in there.
Okay. So it sounds like, yeah, the designated areas is an issue for students as well, which is interesting because, you know, I feel like, and maybe I missed something on this, but I thought part of the big push for this was, again, you know, on behalf of the students wanting to make it a healthier place for our students. So when we have the disconnect between what students are actually asking for. That was Anchorage students, right? All right.
And it's worth noting that the Board of Regents at their meeting tomorrow and Friday have on their agenda a draft policy that would prohibit use of tobacco system-wide. So that is on their agenda. And then the draft regulations that we've seen are also part of the agenda as sort of a suggestion for what the regulations might look like if the policy is passed. And that meeting is in Anchorage, I believe. And so if you have comments, you can send written comments to the board. They won't see them until after the meeting. I don't know. And since neither you or Chris are at Staff Alliance, I don't know if – I assume Anchorage, you know, has some plans to – well, I don't know what Anchorage's position overall is, but presumably Monique will present for Staff Alliance, and we'll probably say something to this, but I don't know what she'll say. I know, has Staff Alliance taken a formal – action on this? And
yes.
Okay.
Yep, and Staff Alliance mirrored ours pretty closely, which was that there should be a know, a compromise proposal that is smoke and tobacco free, but with limited designated areas that can be determined by the campuses.
Okay.
So yeah, that was taken up. So hopefully that position is reiterated tomorrow.
Faye, were you suggesting that the students at UAA had taken a different position as an organization?
Well, so at first, the students at UAA had said they wanted to go smoke or tobacco free. At the last Staff Alliance meeting, it sounded like the report from the UAA staff was that the UAA students, there had been a change in their leadership, and those students were feeling differently about a ban.
A coup.
What's that?
There was a coup.
Yeah, apparently. So I don't know that there is, from the system governance perspective of students, a clear position on this. But I guess what I was trying to say was I got the impression that the board and the president were touting this as something that was kind of a result of what students wanted, and then to hear that students don't want it makes it a little, I don't know, we'll see, you know, where they, if the students actually testify on it, because there were definitely a lot of students testifying at the last board meeting in favor of smoke-free, tobacco-free.
Yeah, and I'm sorry to turn back in. Broadly speaking, that's true. And if you go and look at like the Board of Regents meetings, I don't know if they should surely note this in the public comment. But if you go look at public comment for like the last year and a half of Board of Regents meetings, this has been something that keeps coming up in public comment. And I think more often than not, it was comments for a ban. I mean, then they would get some comments against at the next meeting, but it was, I think by count, it was more for the ban. And my understanding is that, yeah, it was a bigger push from UAA, and you can go find some of that history if you look through UAA's newsletters and its newspaper over the last year and a half. And one reason for that, as I understand it, is you know, UAA's campus is right next to Providence and the medical facilities, and they're smoke-free. And people on that campus come off and go to UAA to smoke. And so it's been causing, I guess, a bigger problem there for there being, now there's just more smoke in the area than there was, and that was my understanding.
Yeah, well, so we've done a couple surveys. Have the students on either campus done surveys about it, do you know?
Sorry. Pardon, I stuffed something in my face. I only know that ASUAF did a survey during their, I think it was during their election, but you know, their survey turnout is not high, so it's hard to sort of say if that represents the whole student body or not. UAA did do a survey, and it was a close vote, but it was more for than against. And I think that survey was held this last spring.
Uh-huh.
And then UAA set their chancellor said, "I want to hear from faculty and staff by October, and then we'll go from there." But you know, since then it's gone back to the board and is now up as a policy initiative instead of just a sort of a local campus issue.
Thanks.
Yeah, so you can find, if you do some Googling, I think you can find the full timeline. I don't have it all off the top of my head, but I know it's there. And I don't know that UAS has been particularly active on this issue, but I shouldn't really speak to it because I don't know.
Thank you.
Okay, any other discussion on smoke-free, tobacco-free? Okay, so item C, the UA Staff Alliance's proposed University of Alaska core values. So this has been on our agenda for a while, and we've just been rushed for time so much that we haven't had much chance for discussion, but I think we do have time today, which is great. The thought behind this was that with the summit team was looking at putting out a University of Alaska core values, and basically gave staff the opportunity to start the process working from this draft. And so as opposed to being reactive, staff could be proactive and saying, these are the ones we would want to see. And so that is page 16, attachment 11. And if you want to take just a minute to read through it. I'll also draw your attention to attachment 13, which is on page 19, which are UAS core values from the strategic plan. It's much shorter bulleted list there.
You know how accepting the Staff Alliance proposed core values would affect the UAS ones?
I don't think they would. I think that as long as there wasn't conflict between them, that UAS would be in addition to the UA ones. If there were conflict between them, then I think the UA ones would probably take precedence. That's just my first impression, although I highly doubt there would be conflict between them because none of them are going to say we don't want to respect each other or we, you know, it's just a long list of positive things generally. So, you know, if we want to do a resolution in support of these or with amendments, we certainly can, or we can have discussion, and Chris and I could less formally bring UAF's position to Staff Alliance on these, since they're moving at Staff Alliance. So I will entertain any motions or discussion at this time.
I'm really pleased that innovation is included. I feel like it was lacking from the UAF core policies or core values.
I will say I was very happy about respect as well, which I think was when there were kind of an initial four that came from the president, maybe. I'm not sure where they came from, but I can't remember what the word was. It was trying to get to the same point, but it didn't actually say respect, which is probably a very important one to include. But, any concern about the way it's worded or implications? That wasn't a leading question. I don't have any, but.
I don't have any concerns about the wording, but the UAF one has a line that says independence of thought and action. And the one thing I felt was maybe not missing, but could maybe be strengthened is a statement about privacy or respecting privacy in the respect part, which I think this UAF line kind of touches on. Independence of thought and action. I know it's something that's been kind of instilled at UAF, but I don't know. I think it's nice to formalize it also and just say that that is an expectation, respecting privacy.
I think so too, and I think it's pretty critical for a university to have that as a value. That's a good call because we need to be able to discuss ideas that are debatable, that are, you know, that advance knowledge and. You can't have that if you're walking in March steps or lock step, whatever the term is there. But. Any other comments? Okay. Can I get a brief oral poll as far as whether or not this is something Chris and I can support at Staff Alliance? Those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Any opposition?
Aye.
Okay, so if you have any other concerns independently that you would rather share offline, you know, or feel free to share these with your constituents as well for feedback. If you could get any feedback to Chris or myself before the holiday break, that would be great.
Does Staff Alliance meet in January?
I think we do. But, yeah, it's lately our meetings have been a little later in the month, so I'm hoping that it works out. Okay, so the next item on the agenda is the 2015 Staff Council meeting schedule. That's attachment 4. Attachment 4 on page 8. And so this was based on what we approved at our last meeting, which was to align with Faculty Senate and then keep our numbers, number of meetings. So it's generally the first Monday of every month, and we'll talk about January in a moment. So that's just a point of information.
Question.
Yep.
Are they all going to be audio conference, no in person?
That's sort of a relic that remains on the agenda from the time that I was brought on board. It's a little misleading because we do always meet in person. Let me rephrase that. We typically meet in person.
It just means that there will also be audio in addition to our in-person meeting.
Okay.
Or is the questioner asking about, are we going to have meetings? You know, we had two meetings a year where we have people come in. And that's okay. You're shaking your head no? I'm just wondering, was that the question, not whether or not there'd also be in-person meetings?
No, because on that schedule it says audio, and it didn't have any, you know, in person.
Yeah, unfortunately, with governance has a very small budget, and that got cut, just like everybody else's did. And unfortunately, we're not going to be able to bring rural representatives in once a year. It was at one point, I'm guessing this was probably more towards the pipeline days, we brought rural representatives in for every meeting. Then it was tapered down to twice a year. Last year we were at once a year, and this year with travel expenses we can't cover it.
I can barely hear you guys. Could you guys speak into the mic or whatever you guys have there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I think it was Nicole.
Yeah, Nicole has a quiet voice.
I know.
So what Nicole was saying was, though we will be meeting, you know, in the conference room, we'll have in-person meetings in addition to the phone conference every time. With the budget cuts this year, the governance budget was cut as well,
right,
which included the travel for rural reps to come in for specifically for meetings.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something we won't be able to offer this year. That said, you know, if our rural reps are traveling to Fairbanks for any other work-related things, that can coordinate with staff council or want to meet in person with Chris or myself while you're here, that would be fantastic. We'd love to see you in person. As far as whether audio conference means we won't be physically present as a group, no. We just will have audio conference available.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other discussion on the schedule? All right, staff council calendar update.
I'm waiting for a proof from printing services. We were very lucky to get it printed, or I believe we were very lucky to get it printed. It's going to be the last thing off of printing services press before they close. I don't have an exact date yet. Their printing period was shortened. They initially thought they had until the end of December. That was shortened until the 19th, and they weren't notified about that until about a week and a half, about 2 weeks ago, roughly. I believe that the calendar will be printed. The sunflower was the winning image, and I'll have to get back in touch with you guys once we get it from printing services. There is still the slim possibility that they may not be able to get to it. Warren said they would try.
And we did fix the Monday start date this time. So it will go back to the week start on Sunday, which is...
Thank you!
And I think any of us will get about the calendar this year. So, okay. All right. Anyone join us on the phone for either
wanting to have public comment or ASUAF or the chancellor. Oh, okay. Yeah. They're welcome to be inside. We want to. Someone want to pop their head out the door and see if we have a public commenter?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, that's okay. Hi. If you guys want to come on up and comment right now, you're free to. No, it's okay. Our schedule has been a little all over the place today. We're bouncing around a bit. So.
Well, good morning. My name is Ronnie Houchin. And
I'm Cody Rogers, and we work here in Wood Center, and I'm sorry that we're late. We had our own staff meeting this morning. But Ronnie and I are the United Way campaign chairs this year, and so we just wanted to come and introduce ourselves to this group of people and see if you guys had any questions and just briefly talk about the United Way campaign for this year.
So the campaign is ongoing now. We've distributed forms to PTAs in all of the departments, so hopefully you've received a form in your inbox or some information about the campaign. And I have the payroll deduct forms or the giving forms if you'd like to take them back. You can give as little as $5 per pay period, which ends up adding up to like $130 for the year. Every little bit helps. We don't have a set goal this year because we're running such an abbreviated campaign and the campaign's getting started so much after when it usually gets started, but we're really just looking for folks to give as little as you're able to help UAF make a difference in our community.
Mm-hmm. And as you probably saw in the Cornerstone the last couple weeks, there's additional ways this year you can give. You can text to give, and you can just do that right from your phone. It sends you to an online so it doesn't get added to your bill. So you can text and give any amount you'd like, and then you can also give online this year, and that's not through payroll deduction, but so you can enter credit card or whatever you'd like from there and just give. The deadline for the drawing this year is actually this Friday. You have to get your forms in, and the drawing for the incentives will be at the Chancellor's holiday party next Tuesday.
So for the types of organizations that we can support through this drive, I might just mention, given all the concern with the budget and the impacts, for example, to KUAC and to some other things that are offered at UAF that we value, we can target towards those organizations through this campaign, right?
Yeah, so United Way has 21 member agencies that they directly support, but you can direct on your giving form to any 501c3 organization in Alaska. So if there's an organization that's on here that you support that's not listed, you can give to them through United Way, and it would help support our campaign here at UAF.
Yeah, if you wanted to donate to KUAC and United Way campaign, you can kill two birds with one stone.
Right. But we'll go ahead and leave some forms and information in the back and take as many as you like. Our offices are located downstairs, so if you want to stop by and see either of us or ask us to come to your staff meeting the next few days, we're more than welcome to do that. And yep, good.
If you pay online, are you still in the drawing for the? Oh, you are.
Yeah, you'll still be entered in the drawing. We'll get a list from United Way probably Tuesday early afternoon to be able to enter all those folks into the drawing at the Chancellor's holiday party.
Yep. And UA doesn't match, right? There's no matching funds to this.
No. Just make sure you use your alaska.edu email with that. That helps them track that you're a UAF employee for that drawing.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's not a text.
Oh, right. The text.
Yeah, so it's if you text UWTV to 41444,
mm-hmm.
It sends you a link. So if you have a smartphone, which I think most folks do, you can click on that link and enter in credit card information, and it'll ask for your company, and you can put in UAS there, and it's a one-time donation thing. It's pretty convenient and easy to do just from your phone.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions or questions on the phone? Okay. So is this all UAS, including our rural campuses, right?
I
place?
I would assume so, yeah. We haven't sent forms there, but if folks want to give online, the link's been in the Cornerstone in the past, I think, 2 issues, and there was a special message sent out from the Chancellor on Monday that had all the relevant information and the links to go to the online giving. So.
Okay, great. And again, we apologize for being late, but thanks for squeezing us in anyway.
No problem. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you for all your work organizing this.
Thank you all.
Okay, so we've got some new business to crank through. The first one is the Volunteer Day proposal from University Advocacy. Nate, do you want to introduce this?
Yep, no doubt. So this is something we've been working on for the last 2-3 months. We're glad to have it in front of staff council. It's a proposal that I think has been it's similar to some work that's been done by advocacy in the past and maybe even gone further up the chain. But we do actually have a resolution, I guess, that we're interested in receiving conducting discussion about it here now, and also maybe passing. So I guess if you have it's in the, I guess it's attachment 3 is the resolution. Attachment 1, I guess, is the request. I'm still a little bit unclear about how those documents relate to one another.
Sure. So we have the proposal, which is actually attachment 10 on page 15.
Okay.
So this is the proposal from University Advocacy. Explains a little bit more about what the day would be. And then we have attachment 3 on page 7 is the resolution to support this proposal. So the proposal is a little more detailed as to what Volunteer Day would entail.
Yeah, so thanks. So the idea, I guess, basically, it's certainly there if people want to look it over. The idea is basically that what we're seeking from the university, and this is specific at this point to UAF, and it doesn't extend to UA, but we're seeking additional annual leave hours from the university to go along with donation of, half a day of annual leave on the part of staff members. And then those day, those hours would come together to form a single day per year, per academic year, of a single 8-hour day of volunteer time. It would sort of be half university and half, individual contributions. I guess the idea is that would be shared and staff and the university could both take credit for contributing in pretty big ways to community volunteer organizations. The other sort of principle behind the specific proposal is that if we are able to concentrate within, a couple different weeks, once during the fall and then once during the spring, a large portion of volunteering on the part of staff, from the university, that can make a concentrated difference for volunteer organizations around Fairbanks, which I think is important. As I was telling Brad earlier, I think it's from the limited experience that I have with volunteer organizations here in town, I think one thing that you hear from them repeatedly is that an hour or two on the part of staff, on the part of people, volunteers, can make it definitely helps. It just like $10, $20 makes a difference. But if we can if we can focus those efforts in like big chunks to take care of larger projects that these organizations have a need to do, that would be not only a big help but something that we can cite that both staff and the university can cite as major contributions, which I think that we're interested in as an organization, and I think so is UAF.
So I have one question, just anticipating pushback on the additional leave from the university. Is this something that we would still want to push for, having this day or this week, if we can't get the additional leave?
I mean, it's a good question. I guess we would be, I think, I don't want to speak for the whole committee, but I guess we would be interested in continuing to pursue it if it would be, you know, if it requires all of, you know, completely annual leave. I mean, that's something that's available to us anyway.
Right.
You know, we can take leave to volunteer, but, you know, having an initiative or having an effort, you know, that's organized and promoted on the part of staff council would be, I think that's a good idea. I guess I hope that, you know, the university would be supportive.
Right. I would hope so, too, and I think it's absolutely worth asking for. But I can picture the immediate question in response being, you know, about the leave. So I just want to be prepared to speak to that if it comes up.
Yeah, I would think that, you know, I'd be looking at the PR end of this, that, you know, I think it would be positive PR for the university, but there's also could be some backlash on that as well. I mean, I don't know, but I'm just thinking about some people that view anything that the university does with some kind of skepticism and say, well, how do they have time to donate time for their employees to come out here and do things? It could backfire. I don't know. I don't think it will, but I can see. I know that there's always that voice out there.
The one's commenting on the news minor.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know how much traction that side would get, as opposed to how much we could gain from the positive PR. That'd be worth discussion, I guess.
Yeah, I take the point. I mean, I guess I hope that would be balanced by, you know, in my opinion, it's a pretty positive thing for the university doing it, and you know, I guess I would also reiterate that, you know, half of the time would be personal time on the part of employees.
This is Selena, and I have a few comments actually. Being that I work with finance, I know this is going to be a major issue because of the cost and how they would calculate it, and if somebody chooses not to participate, do they accrue the leave anyway and then have to give it back? And then there's the issue of what about the people who just can't volunteer because maybe they're disabled or other things, then they're not getting the additional leave because people can use their annual leave right now for volunteering. So I just see a lot of questions on this, just looking at it briefly. I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You know, there are a number of things that came up in our, you know, in our committee discussions that, you know, I guess the truth is that some of those things specifically are issues that we would look forward to addressing with, you know, HR and finance and you know, different components at the university. I guess from our point of view, none of those things were serious enough to hold up the actual proposal, because we thought it was a good enough idea to try and bring forward and to seek out some of that discussion at a you know, on a larger level.
Yeah, I mean, the way I read this proposal is that we say this is something we want to do, so now we're going to spend the time and effort to figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
Which would include probably figuring out can we do the leave bit and how. But that's just my personal interpretation. If we need to change wording to make other people feel that way too, that would be fine. And, yeah, we had a comment in the room.
So I'm sorry I don't have the text of the proposal in front of me. Is there any indication of what kind of volunteer activities would be acceptable?
Yeah, well, so in the past, Brad was kind enough to share with me some of the documentation of similar proposals in the past. It was acknowledged that there would ostensibly be a list of university-approved organizations, you know, here in the community. And, you know, that
it would be the responsibility, and maybe staff council would have some part in that, but it would be the responsibility of the university to approve the organizations that are sanctioned.
Yeah. When we discussed this in pre-staff, as well, the chancellor seemed to favor the idea of, you know, a very short list of these are our kind of focused areas that people could sign up for, you know, maybe three options for people we could partner with so that we could have that kind of big visible impact in a way and form those partnerships. So that would be something to consider as well in the, you know, implementation part.
Yeah, and maybe from an exclusivity standpoint, that list would rotate
from
year to year.
Yeah, I think so.
This is Selena again. My concern about that is in the rural areas, is people volunteer for different reasons to different places because they're important to them. So for the university to say who they can volunteer to, I think there might be a little bit of animosity.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine it being this is who you're allowed to volunteer for so much as these are the ones we'd like to focus on.
Yeah, that would be way more appropriate, I think.
Yeah. Well, I think especially in our rural areas, it would be very difficult for central administration to target specific areas and communities where we don't live.
Yeah, even if it's a little more vague, like in the schools or, you know, something like that as opposed to a particular one.
Oh, I like that idea, too, a category.
Mm-hmm.
Any other discussion or a motion?
Well, this is Trish Winters. I love the idea of volunteering. I love to volunteer myself. And 2 years ago, I would have been jumping up and down for this. I think there's a few things in wording and things like that that maybe I would make.
Trish, can you speak into the microphone?
Sorry. Okay, can you hear me better?
That is much better. Thank you.
Sorry. So while I love volunteering and I support that and I see that as being a wonderful way for us to advocate for the university in our community, I'm really uncomfortable with supporting asking for any additional leave for this when we've got families. We've got people getting laid off right now. It's Christmas time. They've got families. It makes me really uncomfortable to support asking for any additional leave when we're, you know, struggling to find any place we can cut to survive as a school. So I don't know if there's a way we could do this without asking for that, maybe get more of just a blessing on, although as you say, we are already allowed to take personal leave. We can take a day and we can volunteer for whomever we want.
That was, yeah, and I mean, the information that I got from Brad about, you know, prior, you know, initiatives like this, that was the kind of the university's response, is like, you know, volunteer if you want.
So
you can take your time.
I think the difference here, regardless of whether or not the university provides additional leave, would be that, you know, in my office, for example, if all of us just decided we wanted to volunteer on the same day independently, that might be difficult to get leave approved to all be out of the office on a given day, whereas if it were a university sanctioned this week, we're going to do it, it has that kind of the big impact, and it also says supervisors support this, you know, as opposed to employees try and figure it out on your own where you'll have the time and when.
So if we could, I mean, if the wording was changed more to that, so that, you know, we could go hit Habitat for Humanity or something like that, because that's definitely a timed thing. And for that, I mean, I don't even think that you need as much restriction as it being one particular week in fall or one particular week in spring, as long as, I mean, because then a department could even say, we want to go as a department and help Habitat for Humanity or help with the Thanksgiving stuff at Food Bank. I'm just throwing it out there, and that would maybe decrease the administrative load if supervisors or directors are able to kind of have a say for their group. Then there's that oversight already without having to have kind of a more centralized administration. Although I do like your point of saying we could show up as a university and really make an impact. So
I have to agree with you. Our director actually allows us, when we see there's a need in the community, to go for an afternoon, an entire department, to go and help because we support our community. And so being, like, pushing this forward, like you said, with people being laid off and stuff and asking for more leave, you know, may cause some problems, and we might have some resistance as opposed to just having the directors or the supervisors allowing it.
If I may, this is Brad. I think, and maybe calling it leave is maybe a misnomer, and, right. And Staff Alliance also called it volunteer leave time. The Staff Compensation Working Group proposed this as a suggestion. But the idea is not that you would get extra leave that you could then use for anything. It would really be specifically for volunteer activities. And so I don't know that it's not as though you're getting a paid time. I mean, you're getting paid time, but I think it's more in the sense of we're asking the university to officially say, yes, you could, you know, a certain amount of your paid time is okay.
It's
a
contribution from the university to volunteer organizations.
Sorry, if I continue a moment longer, departments can already do this if it fits in their mission. You know, there are departments that have said, yeah, you go and do your work. You're working on behalf of a, you know, not for the university, or at least you're working for the university but in support of maybe a non-university organization, and that's paid time.
Right. So
you know, that's something we can do. It's not as though they got extra leave time to go do that.
Right. So administratively it would just be, yeah, you'll be away from your desk for these 4 hours, but you just charge your timesheet as normal.
That could be one way to do it, yeah. And just be saying that we're asking for that permission.
Right, because if you put it in the voluntary leave, like a category, then it has to be budgeted.
Right. Yeah, whereas this way it's not budgeted, it's not an additional category.
Yeah, like an alternate work schedule type of thing. You know, you're just working somewhere else, and it's for the community. And
so maybe we want to tweak the language in the proposal. The resolution does not specify anything there.
Can I make one more comment?
Yeah.
I feel so bad because this is the kind of thing I'm so in favor of, so I feel like I'm bashing something I really love. But, you know, just listening to Chancellor saying, you know, he's going to legislature and saying, you know, at a certain point you can't cut staff any further back. People are doing the work of more than one person. I just worry that this is undermining that. I mean, that is a true message that he's saying, and I hear people around me saying it. I'm doing so much work. I'm exhausted. I have too much to do, and I'm not supposed to be putting in more than 40 hours. I have more than 40 hours worth of work. And then we turn around and say, well, but we can still do volunteerism. Although volunteerism is an important part, too. So I'm just telling you, I feel very conflicted about that, but I just wanted to bring up that point, too, that we are giving the message that our employees are taxed, and then this may look like they're not.
I would also take the point. I guess I'd just point out that it was a focus of our discussions in committee, and it's also an important part and an acknowledgement that exists in the proposal that identifying times of year when employees are maybe not as overly burdened by, you know, work, you know, on the, you know, during the school year or something like that, is that's an important part of it as well.
So, Nate, I definitely think that you have a point there at trying to identify certain times of the year. I think that there is kind of this idea that because we're a university that's on a semester-based schedule, that a lot of departments have good times and bad times. And I think that especially in more recent budgetary climates, that's not the case. I think that there are a lot of departments that people assume that they have bigger or less workloads depending on the time of year. But that's not true, you know, especially when we have people doing more than one person's worth of work. And so I just, you know, there would be times that may be good for a handful of departments, but I just don't know that there necessarily is a good time.
When Nate was first discussing this, you know, we did say, for example, semester start, right, is already people are working weekends and are crazy and like financial aid and onboarding. That's a time that we know is peak no matter what and is extra peak when we're understaffed, or year end for fiscal folks is going to be crazy no matter what. So while, yeah, our overall level
because of busyness has gone up, the vacancies, there are still these kind of peak times in, you know, HR, student, and finance areas that are especially peak. And so wanting to avoid those times was the idea with the finding a week or so.
It's also the reason why we came up with the idea of having a couple different weeks, like once in the fall and once in the spring, so that it's not like there's just one time where we assume that everybody can do this. I mean, I acknowledge that, you know, there are many positions that might not, find time during any week to go and volunteer, and they don't. That's why, I mean, I guess it's not, like, we would never try and propose something like mandatory or something like that. I guess it's still a volunteer thing. So, but yeah, I guess I feel like, I mean, I take your point. I think that assumption is kind of silly to think that there's, like, a week sometime where, like, we don't have any work to do, so we might as well go and volunteer. I don't think that that's the suggestion here. I think the suggestion is just that for some departments, there are busier times than others. Identifying some of those weeks where we might be able to use some of our time to volunteer, I guess I just feel like that's a positive effort.
This is one more thing on the budget side. You know, I definitely see the point that we're saying where, you know, we're already at kind of a peak point as far as effort and staff. But I think also when it comes time for when the legislature decides our budget, we can say whatever we want and as a university, and it's always sort of looked at with, well, of course you'll say that. You want the money. You know, you're advocating for yourself. Where we really see a lot of success generally is when our communities advocate mm-hmm. as far as how important UAF is in the community and what we do in the community. And so I think even though the budget situation is getting pretty grim, it's really important that we kind of highlight those connections and continue to be visible in our communities and valuable in our communities. Because if they don't speak to our value, it could be worse.
And to make those values stronger. I mean, I guess we felt like on our committee, part of our responsibility was to make changes to strengthen the connection between staff at UAF and the community of Fairbanks, you know, in which we all live.
And our other communities.
And our other
that
communities,
UAF
of course,
operates.
Yeah. Where UAF exists. I think that's also part of the responsibility, personally, of staff council. I think that's also part of the responsibility of the university. So I guess we felt like this was a way to strengthen those values and those connections.
And even if we can't get volunteer leave from the university, I think that designating time during twice a year will increase volunteerism anyway, even if people are using their own annual leave, because it's an event. And I think people are more likely to be active in this if there is an event. If they can't do it during that time and they're still volunteers, that's awesome. But I think we might see more volunteer in the community if we do look into time.
Was there another comment on the phone?
Yes.
And then I know I have two in the room.
Yes, this is Leslie Walls. I want to address Trish's comment about, you know, being overstressed and doing the job of two people. Being able to utilize time to go out and volunteer can be a stressor. It gives you that, you know, first of all, you're getting away from your job, and it's just 4 hours or a little more a day. And it, like I say, it is a decompression. It makes you feel good about yourself, about trying to, you know, show that, you know, you are an important part of the community and also as the university. And addressing the previous comment, yes, if they aren't willing to give the additional hours as far as the administrative side, just the fact that, you know, they're supporting us to go out and be a part of the community in that aspect, because we as a staff need to show how important the staff is to the university as well as the community.
Okay, Susan?
I agree with what Trish is saying, and I'm looking at this
this is Susan Sanborn. I work for the University Fire Department. And our student firefighters not only work a schedule, go to school, required to carry a workload, they volunteer a lot in the community with Salvation Army, Ringing the Bell. I'm at a blank for several.
Fill the Boot.
Thank you. That was what I was looking for. Fill the Boot. Ladies' Night Out. Anytime there's an event that the fire chief is in strong support of, he encourages the students to sign up for it and to volunteer. I think volunteer is the key word here. I volunteer a lot in the community. I'm not noticeable. I understand what you're saying, but I think it needs to come from more the director level to support this for individuals to say, okay, I support what the university is doing, and I support you doing this. I mean, at a director level in our budget, he could say, go ahead, take the 4 hours as paid. You know, if you're on shift or if you're on if it's a work day. And with all the budget cuts, to add this in as the additional annual leave promoted type thing, I'm really not for it either. And I promote volunteer. I promote everyone volunteering. I think it's great, but it's a volunteer thing. It's something you believe in and something you want to do. And if I volunteer and it comes into play with work, then I just say I'm taking leave time, or I just ask for a day and go.
Okay, we had one other comment in the room.
So along the same lines, it just strikes me that the important part is the volunteerism and cementing connections between university and community. And the university can support, encourage, celebrate, facilitate, accommodate volunteerism without us asking the university to pay us to do it.
So I think at this point, if we want to have a motion, then we can discuss this and maybe we can actually... If the motion is to take up the resolution, would we then change the proposal during that time, or would we change the proposal first? No, not yet. But I'm wondering where we would make the changes to the proposal, if that was something that was where we
Since
would
the advocacy committee is meeting this afternoon, why don't we table this motion and take all these recommendations into account? And
well, Leslie, I'd like to vote on the question of the additional leave or the paid time by the university, because I feel like that's the divisive issue in the room for the most part. And that might be something that we could resolve today.
Brad, correct me if I'm wrong, but if there's no motion on the floor, we should be able to change the wording of the proposal since it's not a formal action.
I think, well, I mean, the proposal is just on the agenda as an information item. The proposal is not being voted on.
Right.
The resolution that's on the agenda
is
you know, attachment 256-3. So you, I guess properly speaking, you could table, postpone the resolution. I don't really think you could say you're not tabling or postponing the proposal.
Right. So could we change, so if we wanted to change the proposal now in session and then vote on the resolution?
Yeah, I would think
that. I suppose so. I mean, you're.
I would think that would be best done by the committee that drafted it in the first place.
Mm-hmm. But I guess what I want to know is
proposed.
I've heard things on both sides as far as the university time. So before we ask them to change it, I'd like to know if...
Well, not asking to change it. They're asking the committee to just continue working on it, and if, whether they choose to keep it the way it is or make changes, then...
We can do an informal informational vote, right? You can just say...
Yeah, let's do that. Okay, so as an informal informational poll, how many are in favor of keeping the university paid time component of the proposal?
This is the 4 hours of additional volunteer leave.
Right, volunteer leave or charge your timesheet as normal, or just the idea of that the university would cover part of the time as opposed to all annual leave.
I am.
Okay, and how many are in favor of removing the university support piece? Or
I am.
I am.
I am.
I am.
Aye.
Okay. We could even potentially, at this point, if this is something we want to support the idea of, we could just take out the bit that says how it would be charged, whether it would be leave or supported, and just say we want to have this designated period for volunteerism, because then also that gives the option of if a department wants to pay their employees to go, normally they could make that decision. But there would still be this period where we're encouraged to volunteer.
I think that would be
I'm
the
in
best.
Agreement with that.
Okay. So do we want to vote on this today with that type of change, or do we want to postpone this till our next meeting?
Let's postpone so we can...
Let's postpone. I'd like to see it in writing, please.
Okay. So if we can ask our University Advocacy Committee to rework the first section of the proposal regarding the, how this time is paid for or supported, then we can take this up at our next meeting to vote. Okay. Thanks. Do we have the Chancellor on the phone? Okay. Moving on, Staff Council Bylaws, Section 2, Review. So this was an item brought to us by the Membership and Rules Committee. Trish, do you want to talk briefly about the idea?
Sure. So part of what our job is for the Membership and Rules Committee is reviewing the bylaws. But when we came to Section 2 and started reading through it, and it is an attachment, I believe, in the agenda. Is that right?
The bylaws?
The Section 2?
No.
That I it's sent not, you for an attachment?
It's not attached.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Sorry.
So we just had a misunderstanding. That's okay.
what staff so, council does about our
role. Yeah, I can summarize. So in Section 2 it says, here's what the purpose is of staff council, and we just felt as our tiny little committee that we weren't the people to say whether this section was correct or not, that the greater body should be able to weigh in on it. And so we didn't know if we wanted to form like a subcommittee or do something like that to just say, do we have the comprehensive list? Part of our job is just to review each section and say, is this still valid? Do we still have this correct? And there's 12 things on the list right now with its own wording. And it's not the same wording that's in the Board of Regents policy or regs. And so we just wanted to bring it up to the greater group and say, how do you folks feel? Do you want to have a say, be able to chime in on what staff council, what we say we're supposed to be doing?
Yeah. So there were a couple options for how to do that. One was a subcommittee, and anyone who was interested could join, and then the subcommittee would bring that forward. Another would be during our orientation in February, if we had our current members have a breakout session and work on that as part of our orientation retreat day. And then another would be that we could just have it as a regular agenda item and discuss it as part of our regular business. But I imagine, unless nobody wants to change anything to it, I imagine it'll take a little more discussion than we could reasonably fit into a regular staff council meeting.
I have a suggestion. Maybe you could send it out and then send out the regulation that's in comparison so we can see the difference. Maybe ahead of time.
Okay, we also have a grid that kind of compares the staff councils at the other campuses that Jessica DeRocher put together for us.
Oh, that would be perfect.
So we could send out all three of those. I'm so sorry. I thought I had
right. So anyone want to advocate for a particular way to deal with this?
I like the idea of the breakout session.
Okay.
I do like that, the breakout sessions.
Okay. Anyone else favor a different way of doing this?
No, I'm in favor of the breakout sessions just so long as some way the rural campuses can be involved.
Yeah, maybe we could set up a laptop with a video feed, or I'm sure we can figure out a way to kind of have a digital meeting for that session. Because I think
that would be
that's
awesome.
Very important.
And I can also put this on Google Docs so that everybody could read it online and mark comments with their, and it would put their names on it. And we'd
maybe if we could do that in advance, Trish, starting now, and then we could have a breakout session to kind of review the comments and confirm and discuss.
I think that's a great idea.
Awesome. Okay. All right. Thanks, guys. That's what we will do then. So sort of related to what we do at our February meeting, our January meeting is scheduled for January 5th, which is the first day back from the break. My gut feeling is that either people will not be back from the break or they will be trying to catch up on everything and that it would not be a great time to meet. We haven't always had a meeting, and also just the timing would be pretty close because of the break, so as far as work days in between.
The last few years we have had a January meeting, but in hindsight, if I could go back, I would have proposed canceling the January meeting. But I don't know if everyone feels that way,
right.
But that's if I did it again, I would propose that.
So there is a draft motion to cancel the January meeting. If anyone wants to move.
I'll move.
Second?
I'll second.
Okay. Any comments?
Oh, shit.
I don't know who that is on the phone, but it was pretty entertaining. Okay. So hearing no comments, all in favor of canceling our January meeting?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. So the motion passes. Our January meeting is canceled. All right. Just a point of information on item D, the 2015 Chancellor's Cornerstone Award. Nominations are now open. I had the pleasure of being on the committee that reviewed these from the last year, and it was fantastic. We had some really great nominations, and it was really great to look and see some of the amazing work that our staff members were doing. So if you want to please encourage people to submit nominations, there's a form, and there's a flyer attached to your packet with the information. And having served on the committee, I would strongly recommend that when you ask people to nominate, ask them to really address the components, the criteria on the form, because we got a few that it sounded like they were great or we knew that person was great, but only two of the 7 points were addressed and they just couldn't consider them as strongly as the others. So please take a good look at the form and respond to it, but I'd like to see another really strong round of nominations. Next bit is committee reports. Unless the Chancellor has joined us. Great. So Richard's not here today. Elections has not met because they've been holding elections, which are closed, and they're just confirming with supervisor approvals now and contacting our new people. So that's elections. Membership and rules, Trish?
Our report is attached, and we don't have anything to add.
Great. Rural Affairs. We don't have Jeanette here today. Okay. The meeting was canceled yesterday. All right. Staff Affairs, Jeff.
Our report is attached as well, and nothing to add.
Great. Thank you. Nate, University Advocacy.
We're meeting this afternoon. We have attached a survey that we're interested in rolling out regarding mentoring, staff mentoring initiative. that's open for discussion. We're interested in bringing it before staff council in case there was any feedback about that. Otherwise, we'll probably do additional work this afternoon to begin sending that out. We have yet to determine exactly how that's going to go, but that's on our agenda for today.
Almost a complete nitpick, but the title of it, UAF Staff Council Mentoring Interest Survey, on the face of it sounds like it's a survey for mentoring within staff council, but I think it's a survey for
at large.
Yeah, so that might just be a slight title tweak to make that clear.
Noted.
Okay, any other comments on that one? Great, thank you. And external statewide committee report, if we could run through these very quickly, anything that anyone has to add on here. So staff healthcare committee?
Nothing new. We meet next Wednesday.
Okay, thanks, Leslie. Staff Alliance Compensation Working Group will be meeting again after the break and having Eric Seasted and answer some questions. Still in the information kind of gathering phase and reviewing prior proposals. They haven't started to draft any new proposals yet. Furlough Task Force has not met, Trish, since the last meeting.
Right, and I think we're waiting until Board of Regents for them to consider the policy.
Yep,
that
okay.
We put together.
Great. And then we have the external committee reports that have been attached if they were submitted, as well as the ad hoc committee report. I know Jessica just left for the training and employee development work group update. So that should the goal still, and it seems like they're on good track with it, is having that website, the uaf.edu/training website, up before the Christmas break. That will have all the information about all the trainings. You can find any trainings that you need in one place, as opposed to a new employee having to go to 7 websites to figure out what they need for training, as well as a common calendar that they can sign up for trainings for. Jesse?
I'm just hoping.
Yeah, hoping. Yeah. And so they're also kind of looking through some models for how do we, once this team is done with their work, how do we keep this going and not just have stuff sprout off randomly. So they will be they've been exploring different models that exist for training and coordination, and the goal is to have a training center idea at UAF where there's a core coordinator that people who offer training work through the coordinator to make sure that it's available centrally, tracked centrally, and that someone can still call one place or go to one website and get the information needed. And there are a couple RFPs, requests for proposals moving forward from the statewide side in terms of recruitment and tracking non-credit courses, both of which might have some overlap with what the team is looking for in terms of a learning management system where you can actually take and track your trainings in one system and we can track and report more easily. You can go in and see, okay, here are all the trainings that I need based on my job. And I can see exactly what I've taken and what I haven't. Because right now you can see some of those things in some places and some not at all, and your supervisor can check some and not others, so it's trying to coordinate that. And Trish has been very helpful too, sharing information with the team. So thank you, Trish. And definitely if you guys have ideas or comments, there's a Facebook page for the group, UAF Employee Training, I think it's called. Or you can email the group uaf-ted@alaska.edu as they work through their project. All right. If we can shut off the recording, I think it's time for the roundtable discussion.